Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with Bo Caldwell, CFP, and Chuck Price, founder and author of Investing Simplified, the book, and the number one bestseller, Your Retirement Made Simple. Chuck Price has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investing in retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America with a financial advisor and now a CFP, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and comes to you live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. You can contact Bo or Chuck by visiting PFGWM. Or you can email them with a question at ask@pfgwm.com. Or you can call them right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. And for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, the hosts of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price and Bo Caldwell.
Welcome to Investing Simplified. However you're listening to us today, thanks for making us part of your day. Whether you're listening here on the radio or to our podcast replays of the show. If you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play, please like the show, give us a review. Helps us get out there. I'm Bo Caldwell, CFP, coming at you today here in Portland, and with us back in the studio from his extended absence is Mr. Chuck Price.
Hello, yes,
Chuck.
I'm back in the saddle.
Excellent, excellent. And I know we were just talking about how ready and rip-roaring ready you are to
I'm ready. Get those phones ringing. Let's get some questions.
And with us also is Kevin Stege, Baker Colson. Hello there, Kevin.
Hello, Bo and Chuck.
So we got a great show, I think, for you today. But like Chuck said, we really would love your questions. If you have any questions about your investments, about the markets, about your taxes, about your estate planning, any and all of the above, if you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, I am sure that there are other listeners out there who would have the same question and would greatly benefit from you sharing that with us. You can also do that if you don't want to come on the air. You can send us your question at investingsimplifiedradio.com. You can send it in there via text. So, Chuck, the market's been just on a tear upward, basically since you were out of the studio. We've been just having up and up.
You know, Bo, one of the lucky things about being around as long as I have is I can affect the markets. And it seems like if I go, they go crazy. Unfortunately, I can't know which way they're going to go, up or down, but they go crazy. But I got to tell you, we've had an unbelievable run. And anybody who's looking at the economy, and I hear this, there's a lot of ads on radio and stuff about FOMO, fear of missing out. Have you heard that comment? Have you heard those? In fact, there's even a mortgage thing about low rates. But then, kind of like for me, when he mentions that, then they turn around, the rates go even lower, right? So, you know, when you take a look at the 10-year Treasury this week, I can't remember a time that I was in the industry where I'm sure it was. It's probably been about 50 years ago. But the 10-year Treasury ended up at 2.059%. That is absolutely insane. But I got to tell you, the market's been on a tear, and I'm gonna say this. Don't worry about FOMO, fear of missing out. If you're an investor, you should be a long-term investor. If you have a strategy, that strategy is going to maybe keep up with the market sometimes. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes the market's going to leave you in the dust. But sometimes the market's going to crash, and you got to be prepared for that just as well. Just remember, if you're investing, you want to be diversified. You want to have a long-term approach, but you want to keep your eye on the ball as well. When I take a look at the market right now, year-to-date, and these numbers, I was actually kind of shocked when I looked at this because it's been about a month when I did them before, and They're way off the chart compared to where they were a month ago. But right now, the S&P year-to-date is up 17.69%, almost 20%, and we're not even halfway through the year. And the Dow Jones is up 14.54. Now, before, the Dow was kind of beating the S&P, but right now the S&P is taking charge. And I got to tell you, the markets are looking really good for long-term investors. If you're a long-term investor, there's a lot of great stocks out there and individual investments you can get into that you're going to want to hold on long-term. And I think one of the things that's kind of exciting for me, you young guys don't remember this, but I remember when Apple Computer came out. I remember the first, laptop computers, and they were monstrosities compared to what we have today. In fact, my cell phone is way more powerful than the first computers we had when they came out. This modern technology is going to explode again. And so you want to make sure some of your investment dollars, you look at that also and take advantage of that. But I think, we got a caller.
It looks like Blake has a question about the Secure Act. Blake, you have a question?
Yes, sir. If the Secure Act passes the Senate, does it still make sense to try to convert regular IRAs to Roth? I've been doing that, but the fact that now they've taken the stretch IRAs away is down to 10 years. I'm just trying to figure out, does it still make any sense to do that?
Sure. That's a very good question, because they are, if it does pass, that's the big caveat, is if it does pass through the Senate with the same rules in terms of the stretch going away, it does kind of hurt your heirs inheriting that Roth IRA if that's the plan for the Roth. But the big thing about the Roth is the tax-free inheritance part, right? So in a traditional IRA, whether they have to pull it out over 10 years or they can stretch it over their lifetime, it's still taxable. And the Roth is still not taxable. So the benefits of converting like you've been doing are multiple. The big one, like you mentioned with the stretch, if you can still stretch it out, is your heirs can stretch out that tax-free Roth IRA. But it also gives you a different bucket to pull from, a different lever while you're in retirement. Because if you think about, you have an income strategy where you've been pulling money out of your traditional IRA or your traditional 401k, and you have to pay taxes on that. And then what happens if something comes up, whether that be a negative or a positive? You have, a medical emergency, or we have a grandkid we want to, give some money for college or buy a car for. And if you call up your advisor and say, hey, I need $10,000 for X purchase, they're going to have to pull out 12 to 14 out of your traditional IRA and pay the taxes, but you'd only have to pull out 10 out of the Roth. So it gives you that extra lever as well.
Right. Now, I was just concerned that maybe it just didn't make any sense anymore to do it. I mean, I've been able to pay the taxes through other monies that I have for doing it, and I'm at the, I'm just turned 65, so I got 5 more years before I have to take RMDs. But
right. Although if the Secure Act passes the way that they have it set up, you actually have till 72 till you have to take RMD. So it gives you possibly another year and a half.
The other thing, Blake, is that, in legislation, things change. And hopefully somebody is going to cooler heads will prevail, and they'll leave the stretch in. I'm hoping that some senator will step up and have the guts to stand up and say something. You know, these guys have the ability to spend our money all the time, and then say you're giving a little crumb to you, but then turn around and stick it to you by doing those changes. So hopefully cooler heads will prevail, and they'll get back in a dark room and spend a lot of money on each other and come up with something that'll be better beneficial for us. I like the idea of going to 72. I think they did it. They should have went to 75. The problem with our Congress and our politicians is they, when I came into business 50 years ago, the concern 50 years ago was Social Security running out of money. Well, it's still a concern. They've never fixed it. They've done a few tweaks, but they've never fixed it. So hopefully, maybe they'll get in a room and get this thing and get it ironed out. I like it going to 72, but again, it's so ridiculous. Why go to 72? Why not go to 75?
Right.
It's kind of like when they came up with the 70.5 and the 59.5 number. What kind of idiot comes up with a half year on doing something?
Right. Well, and Blake, the other thing is too, from what I understand, the Senate's proposal, the counter proposal, or their version of the Secure Act, there's a number on when you can still there. They have a capped stretch. The idea is that they have, and I believe it's 400,000. Don't quote me on that number, but I believe the last number that I saw was the first 400,000 you can still do a normal stretch on, and then anything above that, then you have to get that out within the next 10 years, which sounds like government work, right? They're just overcomplicating it. But it, from what I understand, that there is still an option to do this stretch IRA portion, and so hopefully they'll keep, like I'm with Chuck, hopefully they'll keep some amount in there. But either way, I think that the short answer or the long-winded answer that we've given you, Blake, is that it as long as tax-wise you can pay the taxes with those other monies like you're doing, it's still always... Not shouldn't say always. It never say always, right? But it still most of the time will make sense to continue to do those Roth conversions.
Okay. Thank you very much. I very much appreciate it.
And no worries. Thank you for listening. That's a great question.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bo, the thing is, and Kevin, is we know in legislation that what's proposed and what actually passes are usually drastically different. So I wouldn't do any planning or do anything until we actually know what the law is and what the bill gets passed. Because right now, we have some fundamental ideas of what they may or may not do. But until they all vote and pass it, it doesn't mean a thing.
Well, let the record show I wasn't part of that long-winded answer. The short-winded answer is Roths are good. I like Roths.
Roths are always good no matter what.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It just gives you, you know, having that extra... You know, even if they take away, he makes a good point, because if you're trying to leave that Roth money to your heirs, especially we've talked in the past about doing the idea of, you know, passing it to grandkids, in fact, instead of just your kids and utilizing either life insurance or another investment to leave money to your kids as well, because they can stretch it out over that much longer of a lifetime.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't that long ago that when Bush's Tax Act came, when they extended the estate planning, and remember, Kevin, everybody was scared to death they were going to take up the stepped-up basis. Mm-hmm. Guys in Congress were trying to get rid of the stepped-up basis. Could you imagine how much money that would cost everybody, every citizen in America, even people with low income, and they buy and sell a house or they buy and sell a stock, that to end up not getting the stepped-up basis on that at death? And thank God. I can remember people saying, oh, it's going to pass, and we'd say, hey, just wait. Let's wait and see. Let's not do any planning until we really know what the laws are. And that's the one thing, folks, if you're doing your estate plan, when you get your estate plan, that's why you need to review it every couple of years, because laws do change. And we're going to have a change. Unfortunately, we just don't know what the change is going to be. So,
I mean, I'd agree that I don't think the people actually in Congress know when the laws are going to change or what's going to be the law that changes. So, you know, I think you made a really good point that we're going to need to wait to see what actually comes down, you know, in terms of the laws or any changes, any kind of changes with the tax law. Good Lord. I mean, I was talking with a client just the other day about the differences in the new tax brackets, and it's super complicated. And it, unless you do it, unless you're focused on it, I tell her that's why, you know, CPAs make the big bucks, right?
That's right.
Because the Internal Revenue Code is just so thick, and just to imagine what they're passing and all the different implications from any of these new estate taxes or estate planning laws, don't panic about it. We'll see what happens when they... When they come up with it.
I'm impressed he's thinking, you know, figuring out how your assets are going to get transferred to your heirs is usually 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 steps down the road in mm-hmm. terms of, frankly, the first consideration is regular or Roth. Shoot, Roth while you're alive, tax-free gains is significant, you may be pulling that out for your own use, for, you know, your own medical care, whatever. So plan on that first. But it's great that he's thinking 2, 3, 4 steps down the road.
Well, especially great for his heirs, right?
I mean, that's right.
They're thinking absolutely about that too. So, you know, that begs the question, just, you know, I'm going to get up on the soapbox a little bit, and we talk about this every week, I feel like, but Chuck mentioned have your estate plan reviewed. That to me doesn't mean have your estate plan reviewed by LegalZoom. That means, you know, speak to your, go talk to your estate attorney every few years, and any major change in your life as well is a time to go talk about that. I've talked to folks who haven't had their will updated since they had they've had two children who are now in college or graduated college since the last time they looked at it, and it's worked out so far because nothing happened. But the biggest key is, I had this conversation last night, is who do you want to be in charge of your assets, of your life when you pass away? Do you want the state to do it, or do you want your wishes to be followed? And I just think it's worth the time and the effort to go meet with somebody, to chat with somebody. We're happy to send you out to folks that we trust here around town, or see if we can't reach out to our professional network. So if you have questions about that, give our office a call, 503-253-3000, or send Chuck or I an email, ask@pfgwm.com, or Chuck or Bo at pfgwm.com. We're happy to send you a referral to folks that we trust. It's worth repeating, we don't get any kickbacks, any, you know, payments off that. We just have professionals around town that we know, that we trust with our own situation, that we trust with our clients' planning. So if you have questions like that, give us a call. If you have tax questions, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we will be back with the tax investigator, where Kevin has some delicious tax updates for us. So thank you for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back. Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin, 503-417-9595, or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. And before I get into the tax investigator, I thought I would just talk about two quick little points of interest for our listeners. One is I'm involved in a charity, a grassroots charity. We help AIDS and orphan widows in India and Rwanda. And again, we're very grassroots. We're a small organization, but really do provide a great help to investing in, if you will, people that are less fortunate than us. We have a charity event coming up called Cycle for a Cause, August 4th. And if you just go to cycleforacause.org, you'll get all the information on that. It's some local business folks that are putting on this event and making it a pretty fun and special fundraiser. It's going to be a out in the Canby Winery area. It's going to be a great event, all sorts of stuff. I won't go into it, but I'll talk about it a time or two in the future just to promote it. But cycleforacause.org. You can't go wrong with that. Secondly, I wanted to, well, let's just get right into the tax investigator. I am going to talk today, and I don't know why this struck me. I guess maybe because the, as a topic, maybe because the Oregon lottery is going to be expanding back into the sports wagering. What was that program they used to have that got nixed because of the NCAA wouldn't come into the state? It was
what, sports betting?
Yeah, it was I forget the name of the
like DraftKings or one of those, the online betting.
Well, no, it was the Oregon Lottery program that they had back when. Anyway, they're going to be going back to that now that the Supreme Court has, you know, basically said, hey, that's available to be done and stuff. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about the various ways that gambling or professional gambling or recreational gambling, or and the thing that spurred this was exactly what you said, the fantasy sports. This is and how that's going to be taxed and how it is taxed. It's not a small industry. I believe the fantasy sports alone is about a $7 billion
it's huge
industry right now. Yeah, and so I'm sure that's just, you know, gross wagering and stuff. But in general, kind of how the gambling rules work, and probably at some time in your life you buy lottery tickets, or maybe you swing by Spirit Mountain or one of the casinos and you drop a few bucks in the slots, or you play a table game or something. Mm-hmm.
I may have done that from time to time.
But not.
I heard about it from friends.
Very rare.
Exactly. Oh. You know, and what happens when all of a sudden the bells and whistles go off? And so we'll talk a little bit about that. If you have any questions, give us a call. I probably, the rules are, they have changed significantly with the passing of the Tax Cuts and Job Act, which was TCJA, whatever you want to call it, the recent big change that came through. So in general, when you have gambling winnings, say we'll just, we'll pick a nice number. Say you win $10,000.
All right.
You got, yes, exactly. You got to report that on your income tax return. Usually line 21, other income for us, you know, commoners that aren't professional gamblers. And we'll talk about who a professional gambler is in a moment. But, what about your gambling losses? Usually if you win 10 grand, chances are you've probably spent a little more than that to win your 10 grand. Well, in the old days, you got to write that off on your Schedule A as a as an itemized deduction. And if you had 10 grand of winnings and you had 12 grand of losses that you had spent, your losses could only be taken up to the amount of winnings. So you didn't get the full 12 grand, you only got 10 grand. So theoretically, your two amounts washed and there was no tax benefit to it, but you didn't report the income. Well, under the new rules, you can still do that. But the problem is most folks, because they raise the standard deduction so high, 26,000 plus for a married couple, a lot of people aren't going to, this just adds into your itemized deductions, and you may be taking the standard deduction anyway. So effectively, you'll be reporting that income and not have any additional losses to write off against that. So that's a start of the new changes. So who is a professional gambler? Now, a professional gambler is they basically look at about 9 facts and circumstances to see who's a professional gambler. Usually you know if you are or not. You are, it's probably not just a side job. You are focused on this. You have resources. You have a high level of skill at what you're doing. It's probably not slot machines because that business plan doesn't work. usually it's going to be a game of skill such as poker. Something along those lines where it's not just the cards, but there's other factors. So they look at 9 facts and circumstances, the time and effort you put in, the expectation of appreciation of your assets. You know, maybe you can show an operating loss, but maybe you're building a name that, you know, these big names that you see on World Series of Poker or something, where you can trademark your name and your brand. So that's a possibility if you're building value there. Nobody's ever going to get behind my name gambling. I know that. So that's not a factor. So anyway, there's a lot of things that factor into that. The benefit of being a professional gambler is you now move from line 21, other income, and Schedule A, itemized deductions, to a Schedule C, and you are properly reporting your income. Mm-hmm. You are, again, I'll talk about that detail in a second. You report your income, you report your losses, but now you get ordinary operating expenses, such as your travel, such as your meals away from home overnight, maybe some legal fees to set up a entity, what have you, your office supplies, your research material, that type of stuff. Now you get to deduct these other expenses. Again, the professional gambler, though, can only deduct his wagering losses up to the amount of his wagering income, but then add in those other expenses. And I believe, and I think I read on that, those other expenses may be under fire also, and I think they are under the new Tax Cuts and Job Act. So basically, your Schedule C, you'll only be able to write it down to zero and not take an additional loss, even if you're a professional gambler. I think that's the direction.
Well, hopefully, if you were a professional gambler, you wouldn't have all those losses.
That's true.
Otherwise, you'd be called an addicted gambler.
That is true. And so then, lastly, let's talk a little bit about the fantasy sports. And that's where I think a lot of people can potentially get involved. Usually it's related around sports, and, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel are kind of the two most popular ones. And that's where, you know, anybody can go on and make a deposit from your bank account and draft your people and take part in contests. And so it's pretty easy to get involved in. In 2006, It's the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act basically started to really address online gambling and what it was and what it wasn't. The fantasy sports associations have pushed really hard to say, this is not gambling. This is gambling, I think, by definition, is a game of chance. However, fantasy has pushed very hard to say, no, this is a game of skill. And I think the statistics kind of back that up, where people who really, really know what they're doing or have the computer software to run the analysis on the various contests of the players and stuff, they tend to come out ahead more than not. And so it appears to be a game of skill. And as such, they don't want to treat it as gambling. Well, there's some pluses and minuses to that. And I think what I'm going to say here, just like estate planning, legal terms are very different than tax terms. And so this may be a legal definition for, you know, the FBI or the ATF getting involved. But for tax purposes, it may be treated the same as gambling. So, but the bad thing is if they don't treat it as gambling, the default is going to be hobby loss, hobby rules. And that's basically you report your income, and there's no place to deduct hobby losses anymore. They cut that out. You don't even get to put it on Schedule A itemized deductions. So that would be the worst case scenario, where you're just reporting all of your winnings and you don't even get your losses on Schedule A.
Not even to the extent like that you are with gambling at all. So what I hear with that is I sign up for FanDuel or DraftKings. I make my $500 deposit. I lose, you know, a certain amount of that, and then I walk away winning $1,000. I don't even have. I have to claim the entire $1,000 as hobby income, and I can't even.
That's right. Oh, that would be if it's not treated as gambling for tax purposes.
Right.
I think it probably is, and I think we're gonna, with the new Tax Cuts and Job Act, we're gonna have regulations. We're gonna, because this particular code section 165. you know, they'll have a court case, someone will push it through, sure. and there'll be more determinations on, you know, how to do that. But they're probably going to have to, where it used to just be a small fish in a small pond. It's getting pretty significant, and especially, you know, with like Oregon going that way and the other states now. It used to just be Nevada and New Jersey. Now all the other states, and it really sounds like I think Oregon's going to have theirs in place for this coming football season.
Interesting.
Yeah, for I can't think of the old name. I know our callers all know what it was called. It just escapes me.
You have to play it to know it.
I never played it either.
Yeah, I never played it.
Some sort of a parlay.
You know, I got to tell you, you said something that kind of got me, Kevin. You said it is skill and. About 12 years ago, an organization we're affiliated with, and part of our office still is, they decided to have a fantasy football league. Uh-huh. And so they sent out to all of us, and they said, you know, you throw in $50, and whoever wins it's going to win, like, you know, $800 or whatever it was. And so I went ahead and I joined it, and I didn't know a thing about it. I still don't know a thing about it. So they said, well, we'll pick the team for you, and then we'll keep track for you. So I said, okay. So I threw my $50 in. I won the whole thing.
Nice.
So I had no idea what I was doing. I still have no idea, although I did enjoy taking the check.
I bet you did.
Yeah. But I have no idea. So I don't know. When you said it takes skill,
yeah,
I didn't have any skill. Somebody who drew my players and stuff for me did, but yeah. I didn't, and I figured I was going to end up dead last.
Right.
You know, I figured, hey, I'm just throwing my $50 into a pool with 30 other people just to have fun.
Right.
And that's what I looked at it as. And then I ended up winning the stupid thing. So
very good. Well, I see fantasy sports as the worst of both worlds. Number one, there's so much chance involved. Does your player get hurt and all this type of stuff? Or I don't know how all that works. But then number two, there's big boys out there who are spending a lot of money and time and effort to win these things. And, you know, what, you going to pick some guys over 5 minutes on your couch and compete against that? Maybe so. Sports action.
Sports action.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
That, yeah. It came to you eventually.
I Googled it.
You didn't have to tell me that. I didn't know.
We would have never known. Jeez.
So anyway, that's the tax investigator for today.
Sure. That's super interesting, especially with, you know, that gambling getting, like you said, getting legalized and sports betting getting legalized countrywide. So we do have a couple of questions that have come in via text, gentlemen, I wanted to talk about. First one is kind of the pros and cons, you know, the difference between paying down debt, particularly student debt is what this particular question has, versus investing and starting your investing for retirement. What do you guys have thoughts on paying down student debt for, you know, attacking that student debt as opposed to saving for retirement?
I tend to, well, there's two trains of thoughts. One is, I mean, it's a guaranteed return investment, paying that student loan off. The interest is only deductible up to $2,500 a year. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some people that have really put some, especially medical school, and they, you know, they've got 10 grand of interest and they only see me put 2,500 on their return. They're like, what am I paying you for? And I'm like, so you only report 2,500.
Right.
So you don't get in trouble. So there's one train of thought. The other train of thought is there relief coming? Why pay it down if the certain political affiliations are going to wipe out your student debt and put your money elsewhere? So, I mean, it's...
Well, I guess I'm old school on that because I'm always for reducing debt.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest problems in America is we've made credit too easy. And I think if you need to have personal accountability... And you need to pay down that debt. And debt reduction, I think, far outweighs, you know, sometimes right now with the crazy market we got right now, geez, yeah, if you could have went back 6 months and looked into a crystal ball and said, hey, instead of paying off my loans, I'm going to dump all my money into the stock market. Yeah, for that 6 month period. But that's not to say next month the market can't drop 50% because it could. Yeah. So if it did, then you'd be screwed. So, you know, this is why we tell people don't borrow against your home to invest money. That's just not a good idea. It's not sound financial planning. I mean, most financial planners are totally against that. Although I do run into guys every once in a while, a client will call me and say, hey, my broker wants me to take out $400,000 of my home because I have all this equity and I'm not making any money off my equity. What do you think? And I said, I think you ought to get rid of your broker. That's what I think. So, I mean, I think debt reduction to me. Here's the problem with the fallacy about forgiving all those loans. Is the companies that made the loans, since they're all federally insured, going to go bankrupt or going to lose the money, or our taxes going to pay for that loss and that shortfall? Probably our taxes are going to pay for that shortfall. Yeah. Well, at some point in time, where's the burden come on taxation? You know, Benjamin Franklin said it well. If you allow people who do not pay taxes or to vote on tax increases or decreases, they will vote for an increase every single time.
That makes sense. If it's not affecting them, I
absolutely. They'll let everybody else pay for their way.
Yeah.
And I just think we have too much of that in our society right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. What's the student loan interest rate roughly? What are
it
they?
It depends.
Running?
I think it's between 6% and 8%.
Oh, that's pretty stout.
I think that's on the lower end, as far as I know. It's the federally, and then that's federal loans. You know, as opposed to, I know private loans can be even higher than that. I think they're capped. I think that's if I recall correctly, that was something that was passed in the Obama administration, was a cap on the student loan interest. But I think it's right around 6 or 8. So it's not low. And the only caveat I'd say, Chuck, to when you're saying that, you know, paying down the debt instead of investing in retirement makes complete sense to me. I think there's no debt is good debt, just in general. You can write off a little bit of your mortgage interest, and that's great, but you're still borrowing somebody else's money. And I just went through this. My wife and I are moving. We just bought a new house, and just you get the projection out. And I don't have enough money to just pay all cash for a house, although I'd prefer to.
Well, but you know, that's the one exception, a home, Bo, and I totally agree with that. The home has got to be an exception. I mean, how many young people can go out and buy a home and pay cash? You just can't do it.
You just can't do it. But if you really look at, they say, you know, so if you spend, you know, you're buying a house for $500,000, your overall payments, you're going to end up paying almost $900,000 with interest and principal over the 30 years. So that's a crazy amount of money. And that's not something that I can, in good conscience, advise somebody to come invest with us without paying down debt first. The one caveat I'd have is if you are working and at your place of work they offer a match on your 401k, that's money I'd say go before, continue making your debt payments. Don't stop paying or don't take out debt in order to buy it. But that's free money in terms of the match. But once you hit that match, I think the extra money goes towards that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if you've got a 401k plan and your company's, I talked to a guy the other day, his company's matching 6%. And that's exactly the same thing I told him. He said, well, I'm thinking about that, you know, should I invest or should I pay down my debt? And I said, look, your company is giving you a 6% match. The first thing you should do before anything is do that 6% because you're doubling your money. So, you know, sometimes, I'm going to say this carefully, sometimes common sense is the play.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, I think it's common sense when you can double your money with virtually no risk.
Right.
That's not a bad deal.
Just free money. So we're going to take our last break here. We will be right back. I have another question from the text line to cover. But if you have a question about your specific situation, please give us a call, 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Simplified. Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, here's Chuck Price and Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, the show. We've been taking some calls, taking some questions via text. If you have a question, please don't hesitate to pick up the phone and give us a call or send us a question via the text line at investingsimplifiedradio.com. So, gentlemen, we had a question come in for a retired 68-year-old. What are the pros and cons of REITs? Which we talked a little bit about that last week. So a REIT, for those folks who weren't listening, stands for Real Estate Investment Trust. And they gained a lot of popularity based upon the idea that you can be a property owner and you can own rental property without the three T's, without the tenants, toilets, and trash. Right, so that's the tagline, is the ability to own rental property that pays you some conceivable rental income, and they pool money. A bunch of different investors put their money in and pool their money so they can go out and buy these buildings, because most of us don't have, you know, $3-4 million to go buy a commercial building in downtown Portland and rent it out. And they gained a lot of popularity and were sold a lot. There are different ways to own a REIT. You can own a REIT in the public market, either by tracking. There is actually a REIT index, I believe, that was developed by Morgan Stanley. Don't quote me on who developed it, but it tracks REITs in the public sector. So you can buy an index fund that tracks the REIT index. You can also buy publicly traded REITs if there are real estate investment trust companies that trade on the public market. The pros of doing that in a taxable account is it gets that 20% QBI deduction, right? If you're getting a REIT, those have been included in that 20% real estate ownership deduction. So a lot of times, some of the money that's paid out in terms of income from it, it's not a dividend. So don't let anybody call it a dividend, because it's not truly a dividend. It's a income payment that's not guaranteed. And that's a benefit of the private sector, too. So if you can buy into a privately traded REIT, now the benefit of a privately traded REIT over a publicly traded REIT is the volatility, right? So a publicly traded REIT trades on the open stock market, and so like a stock, it's going to have ups and downs. Whereas a privately traded REIT doesn't have those ups and downs and still conceivably pays those income payments. The problem is, a publicly traded REIT, you can sell. We can go call your broker and say, market's open. I want to sell my shares in that REIT, and hence the volatility. A private REIT, you cannot necessarily sell. And sometimes, even though they say and they're sold, hey, you can get out, the plan is to liquidate in 4 or 5 years. It could be 10 or more years, and they never actually have to liquidate. And so that's a big negative in terms of those REITs. The other thing is, there a lot of times it's really illiquid inside of REITs. So for a 60-year-old retiree, some pros would be that tax deduction if you're buying a REIT. So some of that income is deductible, so you're not going to actually pay the full amount. And the other thing that they do is they do what's called a return of capital distribution, which Kevin will know. He sees return of capital a lot. But really all that means is you're getting your money back. So they say, hey, you've got 8%, it pays an 8% income payment, and only 40% of that is subject to income. That means, because they're giving you your money back. That's what a return of capital essentially is. So that's kind of a con. So real estate is a good diversifier, Chuck, but it's not necessarily the right spot for everyone. You have to be sophisticated about the REIT, do your due diligence, have a second, if your broker or your advisor is recommending it, have someone else take a look at it. They're not a bad thing. They're not a bad product. It's for the right person and for the right amount of money.
Yeah, you really got to, on REITs, you really got to check out the management fees and the expenses and the mm-hmm. charges in the REIT, because some of those REITs are horribly expensive. It can be anywhere from 10 to 12% front end charges to you, the investor. So, and I just told people, you got to be very, very careful. And I'm only going to speak from personal experience. The biggest loss I've ever had in investing, I had in a REIT. So that's, you can
personal
tell.
Personal experience. Take that to the bank.
I'm not real positive about REITs. and I actually flew and visited the people who were running it. They had a 40-year track record. And I thought these guys could buy real estate better than anybody in the world. However, there was a little company called Enron that leased a lot of their buildings that when Enron went bye-bye, And there was two other companies, if I could remember the names of them, they also were pretty big, and they went bye-bye as well. And that's the problem in REITs.
Sure.
So,
and then you weren't able to just take your money out like we talked about.
They had to sell
the buildings and do a lot. And you can experience big, that's totally true. You can experience big losses. And just so people know, in those private transactions, those private REITs, the state of Oregon actually doesn't allow you to put more than 10% of your liquid net worth into a product like that. That to me seems even like a high amount necessarily for a percentage of your liquid net worth, but they're doing that to make sure that particularly the senior market folks who are retired aren't putting too much of their available dollars into something that they can't necessarily liquidate if they needed to. And the big thing is, if your broker is recommending them, make sure you know how much the broker is getting paid to, because a lot of times that 10% up front, like Chuck was talking about, 7 or 8 of that goes to the broker.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately, they can be utilized improperly. Like I said, real estate is a really good diversifying option. And if you don't have the money to invest in a specific building or to buy a home that's going to rent out, real estate can be a good diversifier. It does, you know, doesn't correlate a lot with the market, doesn't move. What that means is it doesn't move just like the overall stock market. But you have to make sure that you understand all the risks that you're taking by putting it into a REIT. It's not safe, just like they may say it's super safe. So, guys, we do have a question on the line. Looks like Greg has a question on tariffs. Greg, are you there?
Yes, hi. So, anyway, I called her a couple months ago about this tariff situation. And the way I understand it is July 1st is when the 25 and 30% tariffs are going to come into place. And it was things that were shipped around May, the middle of May. They've taken this long to get here from overseas. And where are they at as far as doing anything about, are they going to enforce these? I've gotten letters from about 20 of my suppliers, because we do a lot of business with these people, telling us that there's going to be a increase of anywhere from 20 to 30%.
So in terms of the tariffs from China, I know that the plan is, the president has said he's very positive about the upcoming meeting with President Xi. I don't, you know, it's all third hand, right, or second hand through his Twitter feed. So I'm not really sure. I haven't been there in the meetings. From what I understand, the tariffs on Mexican goods were the plan is not to impose those higher tariffs because Mexico.
No, I understand that. I'm talking about the Chinese ones.
Yeah.
The thing with China. The China exchange, the Asian exchange, has just got their rears kicked. I mean, we're in double-digit returns. They're in negative returns. Europe is in negative returns. Throughout the rest of the world, in Europe, several countries have net return. In other words, if you take $100,000 to the bank and put it in the bank in Germany, you might get 98 of it back, maybe. Because they're going to take so they have negative interest rates. Throughout the rest of the world is almost in a recession, and we aren't. We really have China over a barrel. I got to tell you, I firmly believe long term it's going to be the positive. There's going to be short term burn though for some industries, and maybe your industry, and some of the industries are going to end up paying the price on that. No question about it.
But, well, I think let me interject one thing. I think the consumer's the one that's going to get hit, not the suppliers, because they'll put their markup up. They're not, you know, the retailers are going to take the Walmarts are going to put their markup.
Oh,
on
sure,
it,
absolutely, yeah.
The consumer's the one that's going to take a hit, and I can't believe that's not going to affect the economy.
Well, it'd be interesting to find out, because we've never done this. At this rate. So it's going to be interesting to see what does happen. I can tell you one thing. When you have 2 million people, almost 33% in Hong Kong, protesting the Chinese government, that's never, ever happened before. And those people now, today, people in communist China can look on their phone and see the freedom the rest of us have in America and around the world, and they don't have. So I think these tariffs could be a really good thing for the world, and particularly the Chinese people.
It very well could affect the economy negatively. You know, it's hard to project what's going to make the economy go up or go down. And it's been, the economy has, since the trade war, I'm using air quotes calling it a trade war, but since the everything has started and started to heat up, the economy has slowed down a bit, but it's still back to that sort of chugging along. One analyst that I follow calls it a plow horse economy because it's not racing. It started to race a little bit last year, and then with, you know, we had different things happen with China and with the overall market as well that slowed things down. But they, if you look back at the even with these tariffs that we've had so far right now, you look back at the first quarter in the economy, the real GDP growth has been pretty solid. It has not been insane. It hasn't been anything to, you know, to set the world on fire, but it has been a solid. That's why the economist that I'm referring to calls it a plow horse, because it's a steady, eddy, slow-going growth. I think that it takes a while for any of that to trickle down. I think you're totally right. The Walmarts, the Targets, the big box places are going to increase their prices. I think what Chuck mentioned about the suppliers or the small, it's going to be the smaller businesses that don't have the reach or the ability to carry inventory like those big box stores that'll be hurt at first. But
you're also going to have companies like Apple that just announced they're going to move their a lot of their manufacturing back to America. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Maybe we may end up paying a little bit higher price, but I'd rather pay a little higher price and have that money manufactured right in America than have it in China.
True. Personally. I don't want to pay a higher price at all. So if I could have both of those.
Nobody does. But, but you want our economy going strong.
I agree with both. I think the people, because we're geared to go to Costco and anywhere we can save money.
Sure.
And the American mindset is save money today. They don't care about service. I'm not talking about everybody. They want to save money on the product, and they don't care how they get it. They'll go to Costco and look all over for it without anybody helping them. And when things start going up, they're not. I can tell by our own clients. We've had people that we've had to give them the new price increase, and they said, forget it, we're not buying it.
Greg, let me ask you a question. I don't see a lot of Americans leaving America to go live in China, because I could live in China like a king.
They don't have to buy the product.
Sure. Yeah, that very well may happen, and particularly, like I said, I think that the bigger thing that's going to be hurt, like you said, is consumers, although I think a lot of times they'll just pass, like you said, on purchasing because it's more expensive.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it remains to be seen how that's going to trickle down in effect. And just kind of the only other caveat I'd say is kind of like we talked about with the Secure Act, and we don't want to make any planning decisions until everything actually comes through. You know, the president says a lot of things that he's going to do, and whether or not that actually happens, a lot of times it's, he uses Twitter like a weapon in terms of things that we're threatening to do to get things done. So it could very well be that he's using this as a leverage point rather than actually, hoping to increase the tariffs that much.
Well, here's the thing I'll say. The economy, our economy is roaring. China's is sucking and sinking into the oblivion, as is Asia and as is Europe. And so we've taken a tough stand, and it's going to be tough, no question about it. But the one thing I will tell you that I didn't mention, I wanted to mention this, and if you're a watcher of the economy, really watch what's happened to the national debt. Our national debt is actually slowing down because we've reduced those trade deficits. And our national debt is actually slowing down. Now, it's not like in the movie Independence Day, where they looked at the sky and saw that movement of the sky and it's slowing down. But this thing is slowing down, and that's good for all of us.
I'm not agreeing with that.
Yeah, and long term, we need to have a better trade situation with China because we have been getting the short end of the stick for 40 years.
That's, I hate to interrupt and hate to cut you guys off because it is interesting to hear, the experiences, Greg. And I really thank you for listening and thank you for calling in. We've got about a minute left in the show. Yeah, no worries. Thank you, Greg. Thanks for the question. And it's worth keeping an eye on what's going to happen in the economy because that affects all of us. Right. And unfortunately, we don't have any control over any of that stuff. That's why they pay those guys the big bucks. So, Kevin, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they get you?
Baker-Colson.com, 503-666-5569.
Perfect. And you can reach Chuck or I at 503-253-3000 or ask@pfgwm.com. You can visit our website at www.pfgwm.com. fgwm.com. We have offices on the east and west side of Portland. We're happy to sit down. Give us a call. Let us know what you're looking for. We're happy to sit down with you for no obligation consultations. Thank you for listening. God bless y'all out there. This is Investing Simplified.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Simplify.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.